Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Traveling in a fighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
A song about things that nobody understands what they were. What is Chunder and what is Vegemite? 509 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. This was one of my very first albums, though. You know how everybody's got their first albums they actually either bought, or I think I bought a couple, and I don't remember which ones were given to me as gifts and which ones I bought, because it was like a Christmas kind of thing, you know, junior high-ish for me. I'm trying to remember the exact year, but that was one of my first four albums or so that I remember.
And did they take you to the record store?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Music Warehouse, yeah. I think, was the first one where I ever bought stuff from.
Wow.
You know, just, man, I miss the old days. I really do. When you had to actually invest in an album and, you know, you couldn't even sample it before you bought it, you just had to buy it blind. Like, I heard one song on the radio. Give me that album.
Exactly.
And then you discovered, oh, that's a terrible choice. Or, oh, I don't know. There's some good songs on this one. Business as Usual was one. Asia was another one.
Uh-huh.
And then I was actually, you know, we have to make this a frivolous topic at some point. My wife is so good at keeping up with, you know, the relatives and sending them birthday cards and stuff like this. And my stepdad, guy who married my mom, obviously, I had to write him a birthday card because, you know, he had his birthday on the 30th. And I was telling him, you know what I appreciate about you is I learned music from you.
Oh.
And it makes me think about who you learned, who you acquired different kinds of musical styles from.
Yes.
And so from my mom, I got, you know, show tunes, classical, and like the 50s, basically. You know, I inherited her box of 45s with the Beatles and, you know, Otis Redding, you know, all that kind of stuff. And from my dad, dad's not a music guy. and like from my good friend Bob Anderson in high school, I learned certain kinds of music, and a girlfriend taught me this, and a friend got me into punk.
That
and
is
all this
funny to think
where you get it from,
right?
My stepdad was really classic rock because he had Pink Floyd, Styx, Ted Nugent, Supertramp, you know,
right?
So every like different, and I always think like, what if my mom had stayed with my dad, and today I wouldn't know classic rock, and who would I be? You know, it's hard
exactly
to imagine, like,
wow,
massive expressions of your personality might be dependent on some relationship that you blundered into at some point in your history, you know, so.
Interesting.
Anyway, I don't know why we got off on all of that, but we have some pretty big stuff happening today that we're going to talk about. One is, and I just don't know which one to start on. There's two issues going on with the county. The county's got a meeting today. The county commission's got a meeting today, so we'll be talking to Wes Moreno, the county administrator, later on today. And there are several things on the agenda, and one thing that is not on the agenda that are, in my opinion, pretty significant. And the one that is not on the agenda, there's no easy way to say this. The county has made a colossal, catastrophically dumb decision. It's not significant. It doesn't affect your, you know, property values. It's not illegal. It's just a really, really bad judgment call. So, you know, on fire engines, you know, for fire companies, they all have their different kind of, you know, identities. And they all have, or at least in Escambia County, and I know this is, you know, fairly common, they all have what you might think of as their unit patch, right? Their company badge, their logo that's got, you know, some picture on it that represents them, and you know, they put it on the side of the fire engine, so every fire engine in Escambia County has a different one. And then, you know, they don't wear them on their regular uniforms, but they have patches that they would have, or you know, they might have t-shirts that are made up with their unit. I think of it as unit badges, but you know, their company badges. And then they, you know, they have mugs that have these badges on them, and, you know, just kind of across. It's just a neat thing. It's a cool thing. It's a very, very normal thing for firefighters to have this. The county told them, and by county, I mean the county administration, Wes Moreno, basically, as far as I, the way I have understood this, told them, you got to take all of that off your fire engines. They made them scrub their unit badges or their, you know, their company badges off of their fire engines on Friday.
That's their identity.
Or yesterday. Maybe it's yesterday. Sorry. Maybe it's yesterday.
What?
Exactly. Like, what in the good Sam Hill is anybody thinking? There's no, like, the closest thing to a reason that I've heard is, well, we've got to, you know, standardize all of these things and make them represent what the county stands for. And, you know, it needs to be, it should be Escambia County. It shouldn't be these individual, you know, unit, whatever. No. False. Oh. The fire department is a paramilitary organization. That's a very important thing to understand. It's not military. It's not military. It's military adjacent, like the police. It's paramilitary. And part of the key concept of being paramilitary is having unit cohesion, unit identity, camaraderie, you know, shared vision of the world. And a lot of that comes from iconography. A lot of that comes from images and pictures and history and tradition and names and people who were part of your unit or, you know, like all of that stuff. You think about ships with their identities and their namesakes and their planks and their, you know, their insignia and their flags and all of the stuff that goes into having the ship or the unit. You know, think of like your shoulder patches that you would think of, like your, you know, your Screaming Eagles or your Big Red One, you know, or your list across the board in military and paramilitary organizations. It's incredibly normal to have something like what Escambia County Fire Rescue has, which is these individual, you know, unit identifiers. And the county said, no, those all have to go. Suddenly, on a weekday, they just got to go. And you might think, well, why? Well, I don't know, because we're going to ask Wes Moreno this morning, because I have no idea. This makes no sense. And here's the thing. Is this a, like, in the grand scheme of what affects the firefighters, is this a big deal? I mean, is it like cutting their pay? No, but I will tell you, if you had given them a 10% pay raise, this is a little bit of an exaggeration, but if you had given them a 10% pay raise, and then took away their unit badges, you're basically even. Like, the meaning and significance. People don't join the firefighters. They don't become a firefighter for pay. I mean, it pays pretty well. But they don't, you know, it pays better now than it used to. Although, that's a different story. I'll tell you in a second. But the sense of belonging, the sense of camaraderie, the sense of purpose, the sense of doing something good, of going and fighting fires and saving people's lives and, like, it's all about psychological motivation and what makes people tick and want to do this. And when you take away their company identity like this, man, it is a massive insult. It is a massive, like, we just don't understand this culture at all. I mean, literally, I don't have it with me because I don't bring my home mugs to work, but I've got a mug at home. I think it's from Company 5. I forget where, but it's like a unicorn or something. It's a really cool mug. It's one of my couple of favorite mugs. Like, I've got a mug for the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office. I got a mug for NES Whiting Field. And this one, and these are, and also a Captain America mug. Because why not? Of course.
Are those clean, though?
Well, not by your standards.
But by yours.
They're up to Navy standards.
They're rinsed out.
Okay. No. Oh, I mean, I don't even know about that. But the point is, like, I love it. And they gave that to me when I went and toured their fire station, and when I met the guys and talked to them a bunch, and they're like, "Hey, have a mug." I'm like, "Oh, this is awesome." There's no explanation for this. There's no justification. There's no like reason you could give that would. They actually, a couple of years ago, they did a project where in the emergency operations center on W Street, they took all the unit badges and basically the county said, "Hey, give us a copy of all of your, you know, your company badges." And they put up a display inside the EOC when you're on your way to the press room and when you're on your way to the fire chief's office and everything. You see all the unit badges. And it's cool. And I put a picture of that up on Facebook. I thought, this is really cool. And now all of a sudden, they're just gone. Gone one day for what reason nobody understands. Also, you have a problem because they were promised a pay raise. And the pay raise has not gone into effect, a 3% cost of living increase. And it was approved by the board on mid-October, October 16th. Supposed to be all the required HR stuff completed the 21st, and yet the approval has been held up in the budget office and hasn't been done yet. They mess up with this. Man, it, you know, if you want to screw with the firefighters, you want to piss them off, deprive them of pay that they were expecting to get, and take away their unit identity. I mean, just go take all the coffee makers out of all of the fire stations. Like, what are you thinking? So, like I said, you know, we'll ask Wes about this, you know, come up 6:35 and see what he has to say, because I hope there's an explanation, but I do not think there is. So I am, you know, I'm always willing to hear. You always got to wait to hear the other side. So we'll, you know, we'll wait, but on first blush. Second thing that's going on that is just incomprehensible to me. They've got a thing that they're going to vote on today at the Board of County Commission meeting, which is the Navy Point Ordinance, the one that says you can't build in the Navy Point Park, you can't sell land from the Navy Point Park. That's fine. I mean, I don't think anybody was ever intending to, and I think this has all been a dust-up over nothing and kind of a paranoia by a lot of the residents who've kind of came and got worked up about this. But, you know, you want to put an ordinance in that they can't build and that they can't sell. Okay, fine. But that's not the problem. The problem is, John, I'm going to test your, 520 test you don't love. But, okay, I'm going to test your governmental knowledge here. You ready? We'll see what we get. The ordinance that they're looking at today says no new structures of any kind, nature or character, including wharves. And it says wharves. Is wharves with a V the plural of wharf? I just thought it was wharfs, but I could be wrong. It's interesting. Docks, piers, and boathouses will be placed or created in any of the park areas designated on the Platte Navy Point subdivision. Fine. Board of County Commissioners shall not sell or otherwise convey any portion of the parks dedicated on the Platte of the Navy Point subdivision. Fine. C, this ordinance may not be repealed except by a unanimous vote of the Board of County Commissioners. Thoughts, John?
No.
Why?
Because you cannot impede a future. I've learned that from
Touchdown! That's it! This board can't pass an ordinance that impairs the sovereignty of a future board. You can't. Like, constitutionally can't. Like, this is, everybody knows this. This is Blackstone's law can't. Like, the legislature can't take away the powers of a future legislature. Not allowed. I mean, think about if they could. You know, three people today, because it only takes three to pass something, three people today could say that only five people in the future can undo what three people did today. You get that that's insane, right? Even if it were a unanimous vote today, all it takes is a three-person vote to change something. Even if five people today vote for it, doesn't give it more. You know, a 5-0 vote has no more authority than a 3-2 vote or a 4-1 vote. They're all just majorities. Now, there are certain situations where you need supermajorities to do certain things. That's true. But this board can't make that true for a future board. Also, just imagine if you have two commissioners absent. You have a three-person quorum. A quorum is what you have to have as the minimum number of people for the government to engage in a vote, right? So if it's got three people present, you have a quorum. And if that vote is 2-1, theoretically, two commissioners could pass an ordinance that it would take five commissioners to undo. And since two of them voted for it, that means it would never get undone, at least not during their tenure, because they voted for it. You can understand that this is not possible. This is philosophically inconceivable. You know, like, this is what? Well, so I actually asked Allison Rogers, the county attorney. I said, wait, you can't do that, though, right? And she thinks they can. And I said, no. And so I checked with some other people, and they're like, oh, no, you cannot do that. And that's up for a vote today. Now, here's what I think. I suspect they're going to drop that piece. I mean, they can't not drop it. I'm not a lawyer. I feel like I have a fairly good grasp on the basics of government in the United States. And I would expect them to drop that piece. If they do not drop it, then some future board could decide with a 3-2 vote to do it. And then you'd have a constitutional, or you'd have a legal question. I mean, I don't know whether you'd have the future board sue itself or whether somebody might sue on their behalf. It's hard to figure out who exactly would have standing here. But this can be undone with a 3-2 vote. Here's my theory. Okay, I have a theory about this. I may be entirely wrong. My theory is that kind of like the whole beach protest over the selling of the beach stuff several years ago when we passed this non-binding, non-important, silly, stupid referendum that actually does nothing. You remember this? The giveaway to the beach ladies that actually accomplished nothing that everybody thought was a big victory that doesn't do anything. I think this is like that. I think that the people in Navy Point want to feel better about how their park is not going to get cut up and sold and built on. And I understand that. And so somebody thought, well, let's promise them a unanimous vote to change anything. And, I mean, you can't do it. It's not enforceable, but we'll promise it to them anyway. And that's what I think is going on here. I could be wrong. Again, Wes Miranda's going to be on with us at 6:35. There might be something else that I'm missing. Or, hey, look, maybe in an hour and 10 minutes, I'm going to discover that my knowledge of the law is completely inept. It could happen. But this is the stuff that I'm looking at for today. There's a couple of other things on this agenda that are very interesting, including they're going to add the code enforcement violations to your property tax bill. And you know what? I've changed my mind on this. And here's why. I was talking to my wife about this, and she said, okay, so if they have to do remediation on your property in order to get it up to code because you're in violation, and then they put that on your tax bill, I'm like, yeah. And she's like, so they're charging you for the amount of money that you made the county spend to fix the thing that you should have fixed. Yeah? Why shouldn't that be on your property tax bill? You cost the county the money. You should pay that amount of money. And I'm like, you know, that's a good point.
You know, I really like her.
Yeah, my wife is so smart.
I mean, I'm like...
Because my first thought was, oh, God, they're going to put people's homesteads in jeopardy with these code enforcement things. But then I'm like, well, you literally failed to maintain your property and you cost the county money to fix it. You should have to pay that on your property. That's just a billing mechanism. And that's all this is. It's the universal method of billing or something is the name of it. And that actually makes sense to me now. Now, I don't think it's going to carry like court costs and all that. There's soft and hard costs when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I think this is only the hard cost, the money the county actually has to expend, not the other stuff, the fines and penalties and things like that. But I'll ask Wes for clarification about that. But I have changed my view on that because I think all of a sudden it does make sense that should go on your tax bill. I'm Andrew McKay.
For almost two decades, Bella Magazine has been celebrating the women of the greater Pensacola community. The tradition continues as Bella Magazine brings print to radio every month on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Tune in today at 9 to hear latest health and wellness, philanthropy, stories on local businesses and women, fashion and beauty, home and garden, food and wine, travel stories, and more. That's the Bella Magazine Show, today at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
eBay has reinvented vehicle buying. From click to curb, everything's covered. Ever try to buy a car online and end up in a parking lot with a stranger and some blind trust? That era is over. Now with Secure Purchase, eBay isn't just where you find your car. It's where you buy it, start to finish. Title, financing, registration, delivery, it's all built in. This is the modern way to buy your next ride on eBay. eBay. Things people love. Secure Purchase is powered by Caramel Dealer Services, LLC, an eBay subsidiary.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services, advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
Oh, how's that flu, babe? Did you take DayQuil Intense Flu yet?
Nah, I got this. Ugh, okay, I don't got this.
You stay on the couch, and I'll grab the DayQuil.
Undo your flu symptoms with DayQuil Intense Flu. DayQuil Intense Flu provides powerful relief of your flu symptoms.
I'm ready for that to-do list.
Wow, you do got this.
DayQuil Intense Flu. The daytime coughing, aching, fever, under your flu, medicine. Use as directed, keep out of reach of children.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College on the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10 a.m. Key Marine Center is sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. It's a dream team, so join them tomorrow at 10 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Start your mornings off informed with all things Pensacola on the Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Anyone who's an enemy of evil is a friend of mine.
Mandingo, how I grok your mouth music.
Oh, yeah, I think when we get to the county commission meeting today, I think Steve Stroberger and Mike Cole are going to hit the roof on this patches insignia thing from the firefighters because they're military guys. They get it. You don't go and make people take their insignia off their tail fins. You know, like, it's just not. This is a.
So have they already done it off the trucks?
Yeah. It was a do it. I understand they've been removed off the trucks. Yeah. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Now, this is going to be an interesting.
Interview with Wes.
Conversation.
We got a big hour next hour. Rick Scott's going to be on at 6:10. We got Wes Moreno at 6:40. Anyway, go ahead, sir.
Well, some Senate Republicans say they are now close to reaching a deal to reopen the government. Of course, the longest government shutdown in history, hitting day 37 today. Senate Majority Leader John Thune said yesterday, I'm sorry, I'm just enthusiastic. I don't know why. This comes as federal officials are preparing to cut back flights in high-volume airports starting on Friday morning.
Yeah, the top 40 airports, they're going to cut them back by 10%. They're going to gradually roll it out, like, over the weekend, 3%, 4%, 5%, ramping up to 10%. Obviously, we're not included in that, but they haven't given the list
yet. Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. People across the nation already facing travel troubles, and it's about to get worse.
The FAA says starting Friday, it will reduce air traffic by 10% across 40 high-volume airports to reduce pressure on air traffic controllers who are working without pay. FAA Administrator Brian Bedford says officials are working with airlines and stressing flying continues to be absolutely safe.
Fox's Kristen Goodwin, the shutdown. It's day 37. Seven firefighters in New York City recovering this morning, injured when a car blew up last night in the Bronx.
There was a lot of garbage and debris on the sidewalk. That was on fire. There were a couple of cars on fire. And shortly after we arrived on the scene, there was some sort of explosion.
Chief of the Department, John Esposito, says the firefighters are expected to make a full recovery. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got partly cloudy skies. It is 65 degrees in Pensacola this morning. Well, an update on that reported gunshot victim in a local Whataburger parking lot. Officials now say there were two people hospitalized after that incident. It happened at a location on Pensacola Boulevard and Boone Street on Tuesday. Sheriff Chip Simmons tells Channel 3 it was likely drug-related.
You know, we're investigating it as a potential homicide. We obviously it's drug related. You don't act like that. No one approaches me when I'm just parked in a restaurant parking lot. Again, you got to take a look at that.
And as of yet, there's no suspects in the case. Investigators are attempting to determine who the two victims were at that location to meet. The sheriff's office is also looking for a white Chevy Malibu that reportedly fled the scene. If you have any information, contact the sheriff's office. Now, you might need to dig your coat out of the closet next week. Forecasters calling for an Arctic blast of air from the East Coast. They say it's going to bring our temperatures all the way down into the 30s across northwest Florida. The temps would hit highs in the 50s those days and lows in the 30s at night. Now, also, the first potential freeze for interior areas could be on Monday night. Two new opioid recovery homes have opened in Escambia County. Waterfront Mission held a ribbon-cutting ceremony earlier this week. The homes are part of the organization's Life Builder program, which is a 9-month residential treatment program that gives support to those recovering from opioid addiction. The homes were funded with a $338,000 grant from the Escambia County Opioid Abatement Board. Now, Governor Ron DeSantis is supporting a change coming to Apalachicola Bay. The governor announcing yesterday that he is supporting the FWC's decision to reopen commercial oyster beds in the bay. Oyster harvesting in Apalachicola Bay had been banned 5 years ago to allow the population to grow. The season opens January 1st. It'll run through February. The governor says that Apalachicola's oyster industry has been the cornerstone of Florida's seafood economy for generations. Well, a Broward County woman is facing charges in the disappearance of her daughter. Pasha Davis was arrested on Tuesday for child neglect without great bodily harm. Her 10-year-old daughter, Gabrielle Terralong, is the subject currently of a missing child alert. Gabrielle was last seen 5 months ago at a Walmart in Margate. Her father reported her missing last week. Police say Davis has refused to tell them where Gabrielle is. Investigators say Davis is homeless and has mental health and substance abuse issues. Now, the federal government shutdown may continue to affect operations in Florida and at the Orlando International Airport. The FAA announcing they plan to reduce the number of flights at 40 airports by about 10% starting tomorrow. ABC News reported yesterday that Orlando's airport is one of those. OIA officials say that they haven't been told anything yet. It's 5:35 here at News Radio 92.3. And right now we've got 62 degrees with cloudy skies. Our next news at 6 o'clock. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Come on. Come on. Start.
Looking for reliable auto repairs without breaking the bank?
Well, yeah.
At Affordable Automotive, we keep your car and your budget running smooth.
That's more like it.
Hi, I'm Kenny with Affordable Automotive in Gulf Breeze. My father started this business over 30 years ago, and we continue to proudly serve the Gulf Coast with trusted local service. Whether you're a first-time or returning customer, we inspect each vehicle like it's our own. From oil changes, engine replacements, and diagnostics, our certified techs do it right the first time. Fast, honest, and fair, just like auto service should be. So if your car needs care, bring it to Affordable Automotive in Gulf Breeze, a mile west of the Gulf Breeze Zoo. Visit us at AffordableAutomotiveGulfBreeze.com and schedule your appointment today. That's AffordableAutomotiveGulfBreeze.com. Affordable Automotive, quality you can afford.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in today at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
This one is under the lights at Death Valley as Florida State battles Clemson in an ACC showdown Saturday night on the Seminole Sports Network.
FSU travels to Death Valley to take on Clemson. Last week, the Seminoles crushed Wake Forest 42-7 to raise their record to 4-4, while Clemson lost to Duke 46-45. The Florida State Seminoles versus the Clemson Tigers. Pre-game is set for 4 o'clock Saturday on News Radio 92.3.
If you have an HD radio in your car, you can listen to News Radio 92.3 from Fort Walton Beach all the way to the Mississippi line.
You heard me right. Here's how.
Tune to 98.7. Wait a few seconds until you see the HD signal displayed. Then turn the radio up two clicks to HD3. Then you can listen to Andrew McKay, Pet Talk with Meg, Marpia Van Camp and Robbins, and Petscola right now, all over the Gulf Coast. It's News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and we have with us Mayor D.C. Reeves, the mayor of the great city of Pensacola. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the show, sir. Good to have you.
Thanks, Andrew. Good morning.
Good morning. All right, I have to start with the least important thing in the whole universe of constellations around your authority as mayor right now. Bro, what's with the porn stash?
I said,
because this is,
you know,
we were watching, we were watching the press conference from yesterday, and we both had the exact same reaction.
Well,
we're like,
if you look over the last 3 years, if you've been doing your research over the last 3 years, it's been a couple times the first week of November, because I've got a Ted Lasso costume that I throw on in a pinch for Halloween. So, but you know, once you commit to that, you know, you know, it doesn't grow back the next day. So you gotta,
well, or the next 6 months if you're me. So I'm just jealous. But okay. Yeah. All right. So it's a costume. Oh, and so last week you told me you were going to be J.D. Vance and you turn out to be Ted Lasso. Bro.
I know, but I have to wear a suit all the time. You know, it's more comfortable to wear, you know, coaching.
All right. Fair enough. On to serious matters. I know the Reimagined Palafox is a very big thing, and I want to talk about that. But I want to just get some clarity in the American Magic story, because there's an awful lot of snarky, dismissive, contemptuous, oh, we spent all this money and what did we get for it? We're not even in the America's Cup. Why don't they rename it? That kind of gist online, I see a lot of that. And I just wanted to give you a chance to address the significance or not of the American Magic team declining to participate due to what they call politics.
Right. Well, first of all, as I mentioned yesterday, I couldn't be more bullish on the project as we sit on this phone call today than frankly what we expected when we started this process. There's really two buckets of importance I see in this project, both fully on the table and actually have grown beyond our expectations. First is the manufacturing job creation side. When this process started, it was focused primarily around sailing with kind of a secondary value of manufacturing job growth. Now, they have job requirements, right, per Triumph money, all of those types of things, but that was kind of secondary. But because of the type of work they do and working with composites and all that stuff, they are literally turning away work right now based on workload. So the demand for their expertise is significantly higher than I think any of us expected. I mean, for example, they've already hired several students at Pensacola State at UWF. They've already built those programs because of just the pent-up demand that they have for their work that can translate to spacecraft, it can translate to boats, et cetera. So that is going infinitely better than we expected this early before they even moved into their building.
Right.
Frankly, they've already got a full building next door. So on the job creation, economic development side, things are going great. And then, as I said, this is really their news to share, but as I, you know, they've obviously kept me in the loop on how things move on the sailing side, I have the utmost confidence that they will continue to be on the forefront of international sailing. That's what I can tell you. Now, you know, the analogy for sports fans I've been using, a golf analogy, is the America's Cup's like the Ryder Cup. That's every 2 or 3 years. But there are other things that are like the PGA Tour or like LIV that are happening on the international scale every month, every few months. There are other avenues that put you in the forefront of international sailing other than the America's Cup. And so, they are exploring those, and that's their news to share at the time that they want to share it. But what I can tell you is I met with Doug DeVos, the principal of the team, the CEO, the COO. They flew in on Monday night. I had a 3-hour meeting with them to kind of talk through some of those things. And again, I could not be more excited for this project. And when the dust settles, there will be zero impact of that in terms of what was promised and committed to in Pensacola. And they certainly gave us their full unwavering commitment that they want to be here and they want to be here for the long term.
And you've got, as you're kind of been hinting at, the lots of other spinoff races, you know, all the different things that are coming, even, you know, came last year, are going to be coming in the future. And so there's other things besides this. And I think a lot of people perceive it that way. I think sometimes I find myself perceiving it that way too, because I don't know this field very well. And I think, well, that's the only thing going on. The Super Bowl is all there is in football. Well, no, there's actually a lot of other stuff too. So that's a good perspective. And that's why I wanted to ask you about it. All right. Switching gears a little bit for the Reimagined Palafox. You and I have talked about this quite a bit, but you have now had a chance to meet with the owners. You've met with the businesses. You've, you know, you're having, there's another meeting today that's being called by the city council. You've put out this letter where you've asked the owners, landlords, to reduce their rent by $10,000 over the course of 6 months. And if they do that, they'll get their name on a plaque. You've asked for parking alleviation. You've asked for a bunch of things and participation. So, what else is there really that we don't know, either what was the byproduct of these meetings or what are we going to learn today during the meeting?
Yeah, well, let me set the table on this, in the fact that this has been a multi-year process, multi-year. So I know that it seems like this is moving quickly, or that this is relatively new. I think that's just because of the intensity of the conversation around it. We had meetings with those same groups in the summer going through design, right? Hey, we've got to design something so we can RFP it. We made changes to those things. And so, I think obviously the property owners overwhelmingly, it was about, 28-2 on the property owners that wanted to do it. And of course, business owners, as I told them, I have been a downtown business owner. I certainly sympathize and understand with what inconvenience looks like. But, there are other things at the end of the tunnel here that I think need to be factored in, like 1,700 feet of stormwater pipe running down Palo Fox Street. If we just go repave the road like FPL was going to, that doesn't get put in. The pedestrian improvements and the bicycle improvements, that there's actually a place to, park a bike and you can actually feel safe being on a bike on Palo Fox Street. We think those things matter. 46 ADA improvements matter. So you can guarantee someone hasn't looked into it when they say, well, this is a vanity project or it's an aesthetic project. Mm-hmm. It's an aesthetic project only because we're already tearing up the road to put in major infrastructure improvements that have to take place. And frankly, that's why we got here. Why are we even having this conversation? It's because FTL was going to repave the road with just asphalt. That's it. And we were going to have to close Palo Fox Street for what we estimate as at least 2 months. So then the conversation, we looked at each other and said, well, man, this is a once in a generation. We're not going to cut this road up very much. Why don't we go put all of these key infrastructure improvements in now when the road, so we only have to close the road once. So that's the irony of, the criticism of closing the road is the only reason we're even sitting here having this conversation is because we want to only close the road once. We actually want to minimize the amounts of inconvenience. And when you add stormwater that can fill half of an Olympic-sized swimming pool in terms of capacity, all of those storefronts have flooded at some point or have had issues. So we're trying to be smart about how we use our time and how we use inconvenience to other people. That's how we've ended up in this project, and it's why we've been talking about it for the better part of 2 years. And why are we moving it forward at this pace? Well, because we want to start on January 5th, where it's the least impactful to the businesses. That doesn't help the city one way or the other. We could start January, we could start March, we could start April. We're wanting to start in January because that's what we pledged to the business owners, that when we are going to close for a few months, let's do it during the least impactful months, after the holiday season, all of that. So we're trying to meet a deadline that helps the business owners, not necessarily one that makes any impact to the city operation.
I'm not sure. I assume that Deborah Dunlap has been one of the people that you've talked to in all this because she owns a bunch of property. But she was the reason I mentioned her. She's a dear friend. But WAR had a letter from her in which she talked about the impact that this is having on her because, if you own vacation rentals downtown for a while, nobody's going to want those on Palo Fox and that's going to sit vacant. Or, this business property she's got for like 4,500 square feet, which, people are basically saying, well, we'll wait until after the construction is done, which makes sense. You don't want to launch a brand new endeavor when you're going to be facing, six out of your first 8 months in business are going to be a problem. How much of an adversity are you really anticipating? I know you're a business owner. I know you care. I know this is a project that has to happen. It's never going to be convenient to do. But really, from your perspective, having talked to everybody now, how big of a problem is this going to be?
Well, listen, that all becomes predictive. And number one, Debbie Dunlap has shown her approval for this project. Mm-hmm. And again, I think the vast, vast majority of property owners are on board because they've been through floods, they've been through these issues, and I think they understand. And that's what happened is we were able to present facts. There was lots of speculation made last week when I hadn't even met with the construction company myself. So I'm listening to criticisms of a project of which I know aren't based in anything because we haven't even met with the contractor post bid. So once we were able to share those facts with everybody on Wednesday and Thursday, I think the dynamics changed in the sense that we understand the stormwater. We understand all of these things that now we've been talking about for a year, but now it's kind of back on the front burner. To be able to share that. To your question, I think that's completely speculative, but I think the fair thing to say is, and I think it's very important for your listeners to understand too, is the sidewalks will be open the entire time. So there, it's not as if there's ever a moment where you're not going to be able to walk in the front door or the back door of any place on Palafox Street if they have a back door. So those will stay. The fence line is literally at least 6 feet for ADA requirement, for, you know, away from the front door on the entirety of the space. So you can support all your favorite businesses, and I want you to support all your favorite businesses on Palafox. But to your question, I bet, you know, I think it depends on the industry. If you're going to see your attorney, I'm guessing no impact.
Right.
If you're going to dinner and you're already parking on Balin or you're parking on Jefferson or whatever anyway, I don't think your experience is going to be that much different. As a matter of fact, there are going to be pedestrian tunnels put strategically east and west where you'll actually be able to walk across Palafox, you know, at least every block or so. So even that, it's not like you'd have to go around as a pedestrian all the way to the north or to the south. So, you know, I don't think the experience, you know, there's a lot of talk about it, but I mean, when you think about if me and you went to dinner or went to lunch, I don't know that your experience is going to change very much, other than, of course, you know, you're going to have the noise and you're going to have the fences. The same thing you see when you're in the French Quarter of New Orleans. You know, you're on the sidewalk, but there's a road happening in the street. And so, listen, you know, I think the businesses that count on foot traffic, obviously, you know, the T-shirt stores and stuff like that, might feel something more of an inconvenience than a law firm or an architect or something like this. So I think it depends on who you are. But again, I am fully confident. We've put up $1 million+ in potential support for the businesses. And if you look at projects around the country, go look at 16th Street in Denver, a massive project. And they gave $1.2 million to their businesses for like a $300 million project. We're giving over $1 million on about a $9 million project. So, you know, at the end of the day, we are doing our best. We're giving away 414 free parking spaces around the entire area. So, you know, what I would challenge folks is if they think I would certainly do your research, listen to the workshop and kind of read everything that we put up. I can tell you this, we have never, this is an unprecedented level of support that the city has given on a project like this. There's no way that it's happened in the history of the city.
Just a very quick one, because we're almost totally out of time, but to me, as you've said many times, it's an adult decision between real alternatives, and if you only do the repaving, you don't get the stormwater benefits, right? And so there's, you know, the question is, to me, for the people who don't want this done, have they been clear with you about what alternative they do prefer? Do they want just the repaving? Do they want something without the aesthetic changes? You know, have they given you the, well, what are we willing to endure if we're not willing to endure this? Has that been made clear to you at all?
And listen, Andrew, that's a great question, because that is the challenge. What ends up happening is there's these undoable hybrid solutions presented that say, well, let's go back to FPL, but then add crosswalks and then add this and then add this. You know, and I told the business owners on Thursday, that quite literally is what this project is.
Right.
The one that's in front of you right now, it's saying, okay, let's do the FPL thing, plus add stormwater, plus get the curbs right, plus put 51 trees in, 13,000 square feet of pervious, 46. We have a completely non-compliant Palafox Street ADA-wise, almost. We are adding 46 improvements to that. So I mean, I think there's this perception of a delta between the project that is in front of council right now and all of these different iterations of a lesser project. No, we did exactly what people have said. And so, you know, that's why I tried to warn them and say, listen, there aren't these hybrid projects that can happen where you say, you know, this has already gone out to bid. I mean, you can't start value engineering substantively the project after a formal bid. That's why we went through everything we did for the last year and why we had all those meetings, you know, is to talk about the design. So again, I think we're in a good place. I think once people understood some facts, that this is an infrastructure project, not just an aesthetic project, and didn't make those assumptions, then you know, I think we got a little bit better understanding across the board.
And also, look, there's a bit of the Pensacola factor, which is that anything you do, no matter how good or how terrible, there will always be opposition. The question is on the other side, where do people stand after it's been done? And, you know, time will tell the answer to that. All right, we always like to finish with a little bit of a lightning round. Interesting study I was reading recently about how people pay for things. The top method of payments are credit card and debit card. Third is cash, but younger people are paying with their phones, like 45% of people. So first question for you, what's your primary way of paying for things?
It is a card, and you know, I can tell you in the hospitality business right now, it's about 85 or 90%, or has been, you know, credit card.
Okay.
Cash is becoming more and more rare. I'm a credit card guy, though.
Do you? I thought you might be a phone guy because John, my producer, is a phone guy. I was curious.
If I left my wallet in the car or something. You know,
gotcha. All right. Do you carry cash? If so, how much?
Not much. Not much.
By the way, John carries $3 and I carry 150. So, you know, the range could be anywhere here.
I know. I probably should carry more. And, you know, in case somebody, you know, thinks about grabbing my wallet, I usually don't have cash.
I gotcha.
So don't worry about that.
Okay.
If I run into it somehow because of, you know, I had to go to the ATM and pay cash or something, that's probably the only time I really have cash in my wallet.
And then the last one for you is, when it comes to food and expiration dates, are you an always obey them, sometimes obey them, don't care whatsoever about them? Are you the smell test guy or the date look at guy?
This is very simple. I have taken archaic presumptions about how long you can go past expiration without researching them, just remembering them from my childhood. And have stuck to those. So, like, you know,
milk plus three.
But other than that, I don't take a lot of chances. You know, if I'm over those, I'm throwing it out.
Okay, so you don't just go by if it smells or tastes bad. You actually trust the date to some degree within a range.
How long do you think milk can go past the expiration?
Yeah. Okay, all right, fair enough, very good.
How long do you think
for milk?
Yes.
Oh, it's completely variable. Yeah. It depends on the gallon. I've had milk go bad before the expiration date, and I've had other milk a week later. It's okay. It's just. You know, it just depends. So I'm a sniff and taste guy. That's my approach. DC Ree, is always good to talk to you. We look forward to the meeting today. The city council meeting's next week. Thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, man.
Oh, and by the way, one just quick thing I wanted to make a note about is I mentioned Deborah Dunlap in there and about that information that she had shared with Channel 3. But she is a supporter of the project, a definite advocate for the project. You know, I'd been talking with her yesterday, and she's like, make sure everybody knows that, you know, because I didn't mean to convey that she was against it, but if I did, I'm sorry. That's on me, not on her. Hey, if you're thinking about buying or selling a home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty can help with that. And, of course, they're really, really proficient at this. And, you know, when the market was hot, kind of everybody was good at selling homes because it was easy, you know. It was seller's market. Now it's a little bit more balanced, even more towards the buyer. And so now is when you really need somebody that's got that skill, that ability to finish the job and, you know, get you all the way through to closing. And I asked Christina the other day, I said, you know, hey, what do you want me to talk about? And she said, talk about how the market's a little rough right now. And, you know, some people are just not getting their home sold, meaning that they'll have a realtor and then that realtor won't get their home sold and they have to call another realtor. And sometimes they have to call a third realtor and sometimes a fourth and even a fifth realtor and go through five realtors. And then eventually they call Christine and she's like, all right, we can sell that home. And they sell that home. And I cannot imagine. The process, I can't imagine it going through that, like as a homeowner and the stress and the frustration, the anxiety and the disappointment, and everything else. So it makes a difference, you know, whether you have somebody that really knows what they're doing, has great success and a track record. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty sell about 3 to 4 homes a week. So they are very, very good at this. And you don't have to wait till they're your sixth realtor. You can call them first or just call her and ask questions. She'll just talk with you. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
This holiday season, whether you're shopping for clients, coworkers, or loved ones, Prim and Proper in Gulf Breeze makes gift-giving easy and memorable. From custom apparel and drinkware to unique holiday gifts and decor, you'll find the perfect way to show your appreciation and spread cheer. Make your gifts stand out with personal touches and professional quality, all from your local experts at Prim and Proper. Visit them at 336 Gulf Breeze Parkway or primandproper.com.
Hi, I'm Mansfield Coe from Pensacola Hardware. We are your best local and regional resource for industrial construction and hardware supplies. Daily, we meet the needs of Pensacola's construction companies, providing superb knowledge and code-compliant products. We specialize in concrete and masonry tools, fall protection products, and tools and supplies for the HVAC, mechanical plumbing, electrical, and glass trades. Give us the opportunity to show you why we are Pensacola's oldest and best hardware and construction supply company. Pensacola Hardware, 20 East Gregory Street, downtown.
Think all art festivals are the same? Think Foo Foo Fest in Pensacola isn't your scene? Think you've heard all the music before or that local theater is predictable? Well, foo around and find out. If you think you're not up for random adventures, can't be surprised anymore, or don't believe you can make memories around every corner, foo around and find out. At Foo Foo Fest in Pensacola, Florida, October 30th through November 10th, 2025.
Visit FooFooFest.com to learn more.
Hobbies can be fun and expensive.
How about a hobby that was fun and could make you money?
Find out how today at 9:30 on Pep Talk. You'll hear about how precious metals are a great hobby and investment. For nearly 20 years, Emerald Coast Coins has been one of the top-rated businesses in Northwest Florida to buy and sell gold and silver. That's today at 9:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Want to win tickets to Florida State home games? Download our News Radio Pensacola app, then tap that app. Tap that app to enter Monday through Friday on News Radio 92.3.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
Oh, this is a funny story. I haven't mentioned this. Did you see that they're doing a top-to-bottom review of Louvre security and, you know, after the heist?
Right.
And you know what the password is for the Louvre cameras?
Security.
Louvre.
Oh, man. Oh, man. They just really don't want...
It doesn't seem to have been at all related to the heist, but it's not a great look.
That's disappointing.
And you kind of wonder if the same people that came up with that as this password were the same people that were designing the serious security measures. Anyway, we've got Rick Scott coming up next. David, do you have a quick headline for us?
Yeah, sure. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear says the death toll from that UPS plane crash in Louisville is now up to 12, and that unfortunately includes one child.
I don't know if you've seen any of the videos out of this. There's one video of the guy in his truck, like, watching it, and you see his reaction to the thing as the fireball just blows past him. Atrocious.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.